Welcome to OncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Chris Ryan. OncLive On Air is a podcast from OncLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, OncLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Glycomimetics, we had the pleasure of speaking with Bhavana Tina Bhatnagar, DO, about the ongoing investigation of uprilisinin in the treatment of patients with acute myeloid leukemia. Dr. Bhatnagar is an assistant professor in the Department of Medicine at West Virginia University, as well as an associate professor in the section of hematology oncology and the director of hematology and medical oncology at West Virginia University Cancer Institute in Morgantown. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Bhatnagar discussed the prior and ongoing studies evaluating the addition of uprilisinin to standard of care regimens for patients with acute myeloid leukemia, why uprilisinin could affect the treatment paradigm across acute myeloid leukemia subtypes, and the rationale for pursuing minimal residual disease negativity as a clinical endpoint in acute myeloid leukemia. Could you expand a little bit on the rationale of targeting E-selectin and just how this target could potentially be used within the treatment of patients with AML?
Yeah, so E-selectin is a very attractive target for therapy in AML. Basically, it's an adhesion molecule that regulates vascular endothelial cell expression under normal conditions. And so it's really important in terms of supporting the bone marrow microenvironment. And in normal people, it allows for healthy growth of the blood cells within the bone marrow. But AML cells have gotten word of this, and so they have developed ways to express E-selectin ligand on their cell surfaces, and they essentially hijack that entire system and, in a way, are able to escape chemotherapy themselves. So they basically are using the microenvironment to support their own growth. And so the thought is that if you're somehow able to disrupt that interaction between E-selectin ligand on the AML cells, then they won't have that protective cover that they've been trying to use to support their own cell growth and survival.
In terms of targeting E-selectin, one of these agents under development is uprilisinin. Could you just expand a little bit on the mechanism of action of this agent and how it's kind of designed to target E-selectin and potentially, you know, make that impact within the treatment of AML?
Yeah, so uprilisinin is a glycomimetic that actually disrupts that interaction between the E-selectin ligand on the surfaces of the AML cells. And as a result of that, it's that drug that actually allows those cells to be killed later on by chemotherapy. So that's the whole, I guess, rationale behind trying to use it.
There have been a handful of trials adding uprilisinin into different treatment regimens within AML. So I guess the first one that is ongoing right now that I wanted to ask about was the addition of uprilisinin to venetoclax and azacitidine, which is a standard of care combination within AML. What potentially could uprilisinin add to the picture for this combo?
Those of us who treat AML regularly know that azacitidine and venetoclax has become a new standard of care for older or unfit AML patients. I use the term unfit loosely because sometimes there's some controversy over what that term means. But the combination was studied in older AML patients and really showed excellent response rates relative to what we were seeing with azacitidine alone. So for many of us, that has become the standard of care. One of the limitations of that trial, that VIALE-A, which looked at azacitidine and venetoclax, was the levels of MRD or measurable residual disease achievement in patients who achieved a complete remission. So there was still room to potentially improve upon the responses that were seen by the doublet. And some of the preliminary data that was seen with respect to MRD negativity in other uprilisinin trials showed that that drug could potentially produce more MRD negative states. And so the question really was whether or not MRD negativity, which is something that we try to achieve in AML because we know that people who are able to fully clear their disease ultimately do much better from a survival standpoint, is something that we try to achieve. And so the question really becomes whether or not the addition of uprilisinin, one, does it improve response rates? Does it by chance increase the toxicity profile? And is there also a role in the achievement of MRD negativity? So that's what that particular trial, which is a phase one study, is currently ongoing. And the preliminary results seem very promising.
What is currently understood about MRD negativity, and how could it be used as a potential predictor of success for patients who might undergo transplant or might be monitored in terms of needing subsequent therapy?
Yeah, so MRD is way more controversial in AML relative to its very well-defined role in acute lymphoblastic leukemia or ALL, where we know that even small amounts of disease predict for worse survival. And in the AML space, MRD negativity has also been shown to improve survival outcomes, but the controversy really has been, how do you define MRD negativity and what assays are you going to use and what's the sensitivity of those assays? We do know that patients who are able to achieve no detectable disease by flow cytometry or next generation sequencing studies showing the absence of any recurrent mutations that they had at the time of diagnosis does predict for better responses in the post-transplant setting. So I do believe there's a lot of interest in trying to achieve as much disease control as we can in order to improve outcomes. But there is still a lot of questions over what's the best way to determine whether or not someone is truly MRD negative. And in the uproleselan studies, they had used multi-parameter flow cytometry. And that's one way to detect for MRD positivity or negativity. But again, it depends on the sensitivity of the assay and how well it can detect one leukemic cell in a population of cells. AML remains notoriously difficult to cure, and a large part of the reason for that is because you never know where an AML cell happens to be, and they tend to be very proliferative. So that's sort of where we stand with MRD.
There are some kind of newer trials that are also including MRD as some kind of endpoint. Some even, I think, have primary endpoints of MRD negativity. What is the rationale of using this as a primary endpoint rather than maybe progression-free survival, response rate, overall survival, your traditional clinical trial endpoints?
I think it's a really good endpoint. I think it matters ultimately in terms of prognosis because that's what patients and their families are interested in knowing is whether or not achievement of MRD and to what level of MRD is actually significant in terms of predicting for relapse and for disease survival. So I do think that it's reasonable to look at, but in the context of a bigger picture and whether or not it translates into something that's meaningful for the patients.
What has been seen just with that original idea of adding uproleselan to different chemotherapy backbones?
Uproleselan, I think, became much more visible when it was studied in the context of an intensive chemotherapy backbone. There was a phase 1-2 study that was published in Blood in 2022 with Dan D'Angelo as the first author. And that study looked at three different cohorts of patients. Two of those cohorts were in the relapsed refractory setting with mitoxantrone, etoposide, and cytarabine, which is a very commonly used intensive chemotherapy regimen in combination with uproleselan. The only difference between those cohorts was, one was dose escalation, the second was dose expansion, and there was a third cohort of patients of older, newly diagnosed adults who were treated with uproleselan and 7+3. And essentially, in the cohort that received mitoxantrone, etoposide, and cytarabine, or MEC, as it's more commonly referred to, had a 41% complete remission or complete remission with incomplete count recovery rate. Several of those patients achieved MRD negativity as well. The response rates were really promising, but other notable findings included the fact that the toxicities were actually not increased with uproleselan. So they were very similar to what one would expect with MEC alone. And there were lower rates of mucositis, which is notorious with MEC for those of us who have given it. And if you talk to most patients, they will tell you that it is the worst side effect they've ever experienced. And so the fact that uproleselan was able to offset that really important toxicity was a really notable finding. It was an interesting drug. And because of the results from that particular study, It is currently being evaluated in a large phase three study. I believe the final analysis is supposed to take place in the first half of 2024, but essentially looking at mitoxantrone, etoposide, and cytarabine along with uproleselan and focusing more so on the MRD positivity rate or negativity rate, responses and toxicities. And it could potentially become a new standard of care because it can be used in all types of subtypes of AML. It's not restricted to specific molecular subgroups. I'll be excited to see what the final analysis shows.
Beyond the uproleselan and its investigation with AML, is there anything else ongoing within the AML treatment landscape that you're particularly excited about? Anything intriguing in terms of research that you'd like to highlight?
So I am very excited about magrolimab, the CD47 antibody and TP53 mutated AML. I think that is a very difficult group of patients to treat. And even with transplants, they generally don't tend to do very well. So I'm excited to see some of the evolving data with that. I'm also hoping to see some promising data with CAR T cells potentially in the AML space. They've been somewhat challenging to design in the AML setting, but I think that that could also represent a novel standard of care if they're able to be shown to be successful. That's where my interests lie. And of course, upcoming novel targeted agents as well for different molecular subgroups of AML.
Based on everything we've talked about regarding the ongoing investigations of uproleselan, what would be your main take-home message for colleagues just regarding what this agent is and what it could potentially mean to the AML treatment landscape?
Honestly, I can sort of see uproleselan being like the pembrolizumab of AML. It could potentially improve upon responses with our more commonly used chemotherapy regimens and could be something that can be just generally added for our patients. And I think it represents just a very novel way to attack these AML cells. And considering its toxicity profile and the fact that it does seem to protect normal blood cells from damage from chemotherapy, I think is really valuable for our patients. So I can see this having a really important role in the future.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air, sponsored by GlycoMimetics. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive on Air.